How's everybody doing? Hope your Thanksgiving was awesome. My name is Matt Mendoza, and this is Across the Table 31. My guest this week is Rob Gruber. He's this Canadian you all should know about. He's not quite a magic guy. He kind of is, kind of isn't. I met him in Dallas shooting Kaijudo for Wizards, and I couldn't help but want to bring him on and share him with the world and share his life philosophy with the world. So, that being said, I'll just let him talk about it. Enjoy the show. And what did you have for dinner? Or have you had dinner yet?
No, I haven't had yet.
Okay, me either.
I'll just make something up. If you need some voiceover, I'm good at lying. You want me to go ahead?
You good at lying? I don't believe that.
I'm fantastic at lying. I'm a Dungeons and Dragons player, right? So.
Oh, true.
Spinning stories and yarns is what we're all about.
No, were you a Dungeons and Dragons DM or just a player?
Yeah, I've been a DM for 30 years.
Oh,
sadly.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only way you can guarantee you always have a game, right? Is by being the dungeon master.
Oh, true. But then you don't get to play.
Well, I get to be as every spider and town guard and every other guy in the world, right?
Oh, true. I guess that's a way to look at it.
It's fun. We have an awesome D&D room here at Good Times, and it's 30 years of collecting terrain and miniatures and books, and it's awesome here.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to visiting. I told Ryan that I was pricing flights and researching Prince Rupert.
Definitely do it in the summer, because we can make more stuff happen. We can get you out on a fishing charter. I've got lots of friends. We can make some really fun stuff happen. Go do some whale watching and some other fantastic stuff.
Ah, that just sounds all wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's a great. You'll have a good time. We'll find somewhere for you to stay. No problem.
Cool. Well, before I go any further, I'm with Rob Gruber. He is owner of Good Times Games. We met in Dallas while I was shooting some Kaijudo stuff for WotC. And Steve Port, Legions Events. You might remember him from one of my previous episodes. But we met... You were flown to the event? Were you just kind of part of the... Did you decide to go with all the Good Times crew? Or did WotC actually fly you out?
Oh no, I paid my own way there, but I was at the Seattle Championships and had such a good time. I kind of can't pass up these things. It's a great opportunity for me to kind of explain to people how we do things and why we've been so successful here at Good Times and try to grow the game by talking to more people around North America.
Yeah.
So I used air miles to get there. So I mean, it wasn't no huge expense or anything. And Ryan and Alex were both going here from as our qualifiers from Good Times. So I had people to go with, and there was a lot of people I was excited to meet getting there that I didn't get to meet in Seattle.
And I wanted to have you on because you have, from the sounds of it, one of the coolest shops I've heard of. And not just in the sense of, like, you've got nifty things or that you carry, foil, misprinted, whatever, but the sense that your community seems so amazing. And I kind of wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about that and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, definitely our atmosphere and just our environment here at Good Times is what makes us special. I mean, our game shop has the same stuff that every other game shop has on the shelves. We sell the same stuff. Our prices are even higher, so you can't say that, we're a great shop in that aspect. But, the one thing we don't have that that nobody else has is the people that work here and the great community that supports us here in Prince Rupert. It's fantastic what we've been able to do. I mean, I thought we were more or less regular when it came to, I thought this is what most game stores were like. And the more I am out there in North America, the people are telling me how special our little spot is. And I'm so proud of that.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about, let's start with you. You mentioned that you started with gaming like 30 years ago. You don't look like, how old are you?
I'm actually 43. I just, okay. My wife tells me that I have like a Peter Pan syndrome, because, you know, I'm doing all this fun stuff. My days are full of fun. I never really grow up. Kind of mentally, I'm only about 16 years old. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Kind of tell us about your background. Like, are you from Prince Rupert? Now, kind of, before we even continue with that, kind of paint us a picture of like what Prince Rupert is like.
Well, Prince Rupert is a, you know, like any other small sort of non-central Canadian community. We're on the West Coast. I always tell people, you know, when I'm talking to people from all over North America, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint where Prince Rupert is, we're almost at Alaska is what I say. You know, if I go hike up a mountain nearby here, I can see the southern point of Alaska. So we're on the coast, the West Coast of Canada, northern West Coast near Alaska. End of the road, end of the Canadian road, the Highway 16 kind of ends here. Our town's got a population close to 10,000 people. It's a beautiful, beautiful little place. I mean, and you would think being near Alaska that everybody has images of igloos and snow and cold, but we're actually classified as coastal rainforest. So, you know, we are actually warm through the winter. It's rainy and wet, but we do stay, you know, we hover around the freezing mark at the worst kind of thing.
Wow. So that sounds like a good part of Canada to be in.
Oh, it's a nice place. I mean, mind you, our summers are not, you know, super hot. So, you know, we'd be seeing, in American terms, we'd probably be seeing a 75 as a pretty hot day here.
Oh, okay. That sounds miserable.
It's a comfortable summer, though. I mean, you can still do a lot of stuff at 75.
Yeah.
I'm second generation. My mom was born and raised in Prince Rupert. Myself, I'm born and raised here as well. So I've spent my 43 years here. I don't have any grand designs to be anywhere else, to be honest. I really like it here. It's my home. Now I've got my sons. I have a 16-year-old boy. We game and have fun, play basketball, and do all kinds of stuff together. Now, yeah.
And so you mentioned about your parents. Like, what did they do? Like, how did they end up at Prince Rupert?
Well, my dad's from Europe. A little place, Yugoslavia, is where he was born, and he came to Canada when he was 10. My mom was born here in Prince Rupert. But her parents are also from the Ukraine. So, yeah, well, I guess I'm a second generation Prince Rupert born and raised.
Okay.
And my dad here, he runs one of the local plumbing shops here in town. And my mom has always just been a homemaker. So she's been a stay-home mom with me and my brother since we were small.
No, that's funny that they're from Europe, because that's like the opposite side of the continent. That's about like as far away, other than Alaska, that seems to be as far away from Europe as you could possibly get.
Yeah, my dad's family made their way all across Canada when they came over. It was during the World War II that my grandma came across, and then my dad came across shortly after. But they've made their way all the way across. I don't know how they fell into Prince Rupert, but you know, it's not a place you just kind of make your way to. You have to really have a reason to come here, I would think.
Yeah, it seems like it's like, well, we don't feel like living in Canada, but or in Alaska, but let's live like really close, I guess.
Yeah, they worked. My grandpa worked railroad, so I guess that, you know, building the Western Railroad is how he ended up over here.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. No, and when you discovered gaming at, it sounds like, a really young age. I mean, if you've been gaming for 30 years, you were 13, 12.
Yeah.
That was previous to Magic. That was like probably right as D&D was starting. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's I think D&D started in 75, Dungeons & Dragons 76. So I would have been 5 or 6 then. But I started shortly after. And I got a funny story. I was actually a rotten kid. You know, pretty misbehaved type. My dad says I was mischievous in an evil way as a child. So Dungeons and Dragons was actually one of my friend's mom's idea to keep us out of trouble. She hired a high school kid, and we had to, my parents signed a waiver thing that said we were going to show up 3 days of the week through the summer to play Dungeons and Dragons. And she figured it was going to be good for our reading and just keep us out of trouble. We had to play as the good guys and stuff like that. So at first I was totally opposed to this whole idea. I thought, well, you know, I'm wasting my whole summer playing a game. It's just what have I been signed up for? But you know what? That was the changing point in my life. That I think it was the summer of grade 6 and grade 7. So however old you are, maybe 11, mm-hmm. I think. That changed things around. And then when that summer was done, we all liked it so much that, you know, my dad saw a big change. You know, here I am at home reading instead of making fireworks or bombs or something. And, you know, so he told us, okay, one of you guys, because we were all a little bit bombed out that the dungeon, you know, the adventure was over. We didn't have the dungeon master anymore. So my dad said, one of you guys pick up the torch and be the dungeon master and I'll buy all the gear, because he was, you know, he's so happy with the change in all of us rotten kids. I'm kind of the creative guy of the group. So I ended up being the dungeon master at that point, and we didn't look back. We've played ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. A little bit crazy, but.
Did you have a brother?
I have a younger brother. He's also a hardcore gamer.
Okay.
A lot like me. He doesn't live in Prince Rupert anymore, but we're in touch and he comes home quite frequently. He runs conventions and stuff in Victoria.
Oh wow, cool.
Yeah, Victoria, BC. So he's another Gruber. My dad, Grandpa Gruber, plays Dungeons and Dragons as well. So
do you guys ever get together for sessions?
Yeah, I mean, we go down every year to visit my brother, and my brother will host a session. My dad gets to play, my son gets to play, and I get to play as well. So three generations playing Dungeons and Dragons there is pretty awesome.
Wow, that is awesome.
My dad only ever wants to be like a fighter or a barbarian, though. he doesn't want to have to think about too much stuff. He just wants to kill things.
Smash, smash, smash.
Yeah, he always ends up dead.
as people in the fray are want to do, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's great that I can do that with my son and my dad. You know, I'm really proud of the fact that my dad plays Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, 74-year-old Dungeons and Dragons players, not too common.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. No, and when you discovered D&D, you were like this kid that is so atypical nerd. I mean, you probably picked on nerds, I'm assuming, being that you were kind of a rapscallion.
Yeah, I actually never really picked on anybody.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I'm quite large now, but I was kind of a runty kid then, and I was picked on quite frequently. So when I did, I think between the grade 8 and grade 9 year, I think I grew 11 inches. So I went from being tiny to quite big, and everybody thought, oh, he's going to get what's owed to him from all those guys that were picking on him. But when you've been, you know, when you've been bullied, it's hard, very difficult to be a bully yourself after that. So I never really ended up being, but I mean, I'll tell you the truth, that you couldn't tell anybody you played Dungeons and Dragons. That would have been, you know, I was a captain of the basketball team and things like that. And that would have been social suicide to tell anybody you played Dungeons and Dragons back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No girls played Dungeons and Dragons back then.
Yeah, yeah, it was still when it was in the basement and all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we told everybody we were playing poker through high school.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what kind of captured you about D&D?
I don't know. It's just I really enjoy. It's still my favorite game. I mean, I gotta say I love playing Kaijudo. I love playing Magic and that stuff. But Dungeons and Dragons always, you know, just because it's so open ended, it's so imagination based. I mean, anything can happen. There's no rules for some of the stuff. You can break all the rules playing Dungeons and Dragons. And I really get a lot out of seeing guys succeed in my campaigns. And, you know, if I come up with some great adventure and seeing how the players kind of get their take on it and if they can succeed is huge. I always say if your D&D adventure is kind of reading like a comic book or a good novel, then you're really doing a good job as the DM. You know, like if it's flowing, like you're reading a story. You know, my first book that I really sat down and read was The Hobbit, and that was our reading assignment for joining the Dungeons and Dragons when we were kids. We had to read that. So,
oh yeah. No, that's a terrible assignment.
Well, I mean, it was for a kid that didn't want to do any reading.
You know, oh, like, true. Yeah,
yeah. I wanted to go be out, you know, go karting and skateboarding and riding bikes and stuff. I didn't want to be playing. I wanted to be playing basketball and doing active stuff, not reading books. But you know, that Hobbit, it captivated me. The Hobbit, it and it kind of made the difference. That was the point. A lot of things turned around in my life when I started playing D&D.
Now, kind of what other ways did D&D change you? I mean, you mentioned you mentioned that you became a reader and you became less of a troublemaker. Like, are there any other ways? Like, what was it about it?
Well, I mean, that too, I just kind of smartened up my act. That got me playing basketball, believe it or not, too.
Really? D&D got you playing basketball?
Well, I mean, it changed who I was, and I got a little more focused and was, you know, instead of spending time mischievously, I was, my time was better spent doing productive things. And yeah, I really like D&D, and one of my guys that I played D&D with was a basketball guy too. So, I mean, there you go. You make another friend, and our dungeon master was a basketball guy, kind of encouraged me to get into that a little bit more. And yeah, you know, it's just when you become a good boy after being a not so good boy, things change.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you were developing, like as a young adolescent, then as a teenager, how did you find a balance between, you know, being a physically, I mean, you're the captain of the basketball team, so you obviously are physically gifted to some respect. How did you sort of develop this dual sort of life where you had, you know, this D&D stuff and you were reading, and but you were also, I mean, kind of being a scholar and an athlete at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, that's the nice thing here at Good Times. I can, we've got lots of those guys now. I'm not the only one. So a lot of the young guys coming up are all hockey players, plus playing Kaijudo, plus playing Dungeons & Dragons. We've got whole groups of girls playing Dungeons & Dragons and stuff. But for me, I mean, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. Like, you met me. I just kind of roll with everything. I'm friends with everybody. So it was easy enough for me, you know, like to be friends with different groups. What just seemed normal for me was really, really kind of normal. And I liked doing both things, and I don't do anything half-assed, so I mean, I went all out playing D&D, I went all out playing basketball, and I just really enjoyed growing up being that guy that did everything. Uh-huh. It was great for me. I mean, I'm always telling the kids, you know, exercise body and mind. Don't just be a jock. Don't just be a chess player. Don't just be a book guy. Do a little bit of everything. Get into the drama club too. You know, like do it all. Have fun. If you enjoy doing something, go ahead and do it. Don't worry about what anybody's going to say. Go do it. You'll find people that are there that like the same stuff as you. And then go play basketball. You'll find the guys playing basketball like basketball for a reason. You know, and if you're the guy that does it all, you might get one of those basketball guys to come play D&D with you. You might, you know, it's just going to spin off. I everything's fun. You give everything a chance. Go in with an open mind. And, you know, like if it takes a guy like me to kind of be that in-between guy, I don't mind being it. You know, make everybody have fun.
And when you were in high school, it sounds like a little basketball team from a town with a population of about 10,000. So if you and three other basketball players or two other basketball players were in your D&D group, I mean, that encompasses like a third of your basketball team, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, our team size is the same as anywhere else.
So about 12 or 13 people.
Yeah, 12 players. I mean, now our schools actually had to do some cuts this year, which doesn't happen in the past very often. So it's a good thing. We got a pretty talented basketball team. Our senior boys, Rainmakers, are respected all through the region. You know, we've actually won provincials one year in the past. So even though we're in a small little place, I mean, my son's team when he was in grade 8 from here, from Prince Rupert, they beat some schools. They beat some schools that have like 3,000 students. So. You know, we've got 400.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a pretty big accomplishment. We're pretty proud. We've got some good coaches up here. Prince Rupert's a pretty good little town. You know, my son and his guys also won medals provincially for swimming when they were younger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And these guys are all the same guys that are playing Dungeons and Dragons and Kaijudo and Magic as well. We've got it's kind of an anomaly here.
No, that's kind of what I was getting to is, when you were a kid, like obviously now it seems to be okay to be openly play D&D and be an athlete at the same time. But when you were growing up, despite a lot of your basketball teammates playing D&D, it wasn't accepted. Like what do you feel is the difference now?
You know, we talk about it sometimes, but I think the video games thing has helped a lot. Like it's kind of cool to be a gamer now. So it's a lot of people are wanting to play D&D. Even people that maybe shunned it in the past are now older and like you know, I've always wanted to kind of give that a try, you know, and as long as you can give them the venue to do that, you know, like I run Dungeons & Dragons birthday parties here at my store. So, you know, like
we do 3-hour. I want a D&D birthday party.
Yeah, they're epic, man. I make a scroll up and you hand it out. That's the invite you hand out at school. You know, it's got a seal on it. It's got the whole mission on there. And, you know, it's all in character and you can hand those out to your party guests, and we've done some really cool stuff. I mean, we do some creative kind of stuff, and we make it really cool to play these games, So then the cool guys want to play it too. You know, like, we are the coolest guys because we're doing all the coolest stuff, right?
Yeah.
I dress, we're going to The Hobbit next week, The Desolation of Smaug, and we're going to dress up. I'm going to be, you know, Elrond. We're going to have like Gandalf there. Ryan Lass is going to be Gandalf. We've got Naomi's going to be Queen Galadriel. Our, my little friend Olivia is going to be Arwen. My son will be Legolas. We're going to dress up, foam LARP swords. We're going to the theater like that. You know, and then we invite everybody to meet us at good times and join us. You want to dress as a hobbit, a dwarf, whatever you want to be. And you're not going to get picked on because, you know, I'll be right at the front of the line. So, you know.
So, okay. So now that things are, it's okay to be a nerd, I guess. One question I was curious about, and especially when kind of Dungeons and Dragons or like Magic or other games, Kaijudo, etc., when they reach these far off places like Prince Rupert, How is that? Like, how did D&D reach this small town of 10,000?
Wow, you know, that was a long time ago, and I don't even know how it got here. All I know is that the young high school student that was hired to teach us to basically, that was his job for the summer, was to DM us for 3 days a week through the summer, and okay. that's how I was introduced. I didn't know anything about D&D until that point. I was against it, even though I didn't know anything about it. So we were introduced that way. And then we had a little, like a stationery store here when I was young. And they carried some of the lead figurines and some of the modules. You remember the old, you know, the Against the Giants and those kind of old D&D modules?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the classics. And they carried all that stuff. And, then I'd be saving my allowance. And we'd go down and buy a figure and paint it up. And it was just awesome. It was magical. I fell in love with D&D. It didn't take long. I fell in love pretty quick, and that, like I said, that turned things around for me. That spun off into all kinds of other games that we did everything. Every game that came out, we did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That kind of leads us to Magic. When did you discover Magic?
Right when it came out. I was...
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I probably had one of the biggest alpha beta collections of all time, my friend, and I kick myself now that I don't have it anymore. But I traded that stuff for a paintball gun. But you're talking to a guy that had 30 Black Lotuses. You know, like,
whoa.
I owned a restaurant at the time when Magic first came out. So I had a little bit of, and I still lived in my parents' basement. So I had a little bit of disposable income. And I would go down and buy, you know, six boxes of alpha, six boxes of beta, and just, you know, have some fun with my friends. We'd open it up and play. I'd let them use all my moxes because they needed them for their decks or whatever. And, you know, it was... Magic was awesome. At that restaurant, late nights, we had nothing else to do. I'm stuck there till 3 a.m. kind of thing. My buddies would come down. We'd break open some beers and play Magic. Was a good time killer.
I would have definitely liked to work at that restaurant.
Yeah, that was a pretty great restaurant. We had a lot of fun.
And then, so when you graduated high school, how did your life end up? What kind of path did you take?
I went into university, but right out of high school and found that wasn't really for me. I did some homeschooling stuff, you know, like we had a Northwest Community College here. So I did some business administration type intro courses there. And that, you know, wasn't really, again, that wasn't kind of my thing. My dad, you know, he said, hey, you can always fall back. You can always become a plumber because he had the plumbing shop, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he was always the guy telling me, you don't want to be a plumber, you know? So I was like, okay. So, I figured out I had to do something. A restaurant, one of the local restaurants came up for sale for a portion of it. They needed a young working partner. And that's what I did for 4 years. Now, that was four long, 7 days a week, 12, 14 hours a day. When you're 20 years old, that's a tough shift to call. You know, all your friends all your friends are playing basketball and goofing off and whatnot, and you're working like a dog. So that's where I got my work ethic, and a lot of my drive came from those 4 years. You know, I had to basically run and lead, you know, a whole team of people. I was the acting owner of that business at 20 years old. You know, so I'm telling 30-year-olds what they got to do and this, that, and the next thing. It was a real eye opener. And I mean, I enjoyed it. That was a long 4 years, though. That was all, you know, I was in the firing line for a long time there, 4 years doing that. And after that, I decided, you know what, I'm going to go take my dad up on that offer. I'll be a plumber. I figured in the worst case scenario, I'll work with him for 4 years, get my ticket. And you know, nobody can take that away from me.
What's your ticket?
Well, my plumbing ticket, my gas fitter's ticket. You know, you get certified.
Oh, okay.
So I that was my plan, was to do. Believe it or not, I dreamed of Good Times even then. I had grand designs that I was going to open Good Times even at 20. 20 years ago kind of thing. Me and my brother actually was the guy that trademarked that name. Like, he bought the license so that we would have Good Times if we ever did it. He's like, that's the perfect name. You know, let's get it. And because it was always going to be me and my brother that were going to open this great gaming store. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was crazy that day. I phoned him and said, hey, man, you got to get your name off the deed, the title for Good Times, because I'm going to open it up with another guy here. And, you know, it was crazy that day.
When did you realize that that's what you wanted to do? Like, when did the idea for Good Times Games take hold?
20 years ago, I wanted to have Good Times. When I was at that restaurant, that was my sort of end result, was always opening Good Times. That's always been my dream.
Okay.
You know, even today, I don't work at Good Times. You know, like, I'm here a lot, but I'm not an official employee of Good Times. I still work in the plumbing shop. And that's just so that my payroll burden won't be on Good Times. So that, you know, like, I want Good Times. There's still more building for Good Times to go. Mm-hmm. We're only 5 years in. And if I had to take a wage out of here, that would slow things down. So, you know, I've got enough energy that I can work the two jobs and have no trouble doing that.
Yeah. Can you really call Good Times a job?
No, I mean, I'll be the happiest guy on the planet if I was here full time every day. I've got a lot of ideas. You know, if you think Good Times is really rolling, I got 50 more ideas that I haven't even put to paper yet. I love being at Good Times. I could be here for hours on end, and, you know, we leave at 3 a.m. and it's like, wow, where'd the time go?
Yeah, yeah. Our shop is very similar in its hours anyway. So you mentioned that, you know, when you were in the restaurant, when you were working really diligently, you realized a lot of things about yourself. Did you already know that you kind of had an entrepreneurial bent?
Yeah, I guess I did. I've always kind of been a driven kind of guy. Even as a basketball player, I was making T-shirts with my name on it and selling them at the high school and capitalizing on that. And, you know, so
With your name on it?
Yeah, yeah.
I made not egotistical at all.
No, I know. I sold out too. It was crazy. Nothing like looking up into the stands and seeing like 60 guys wearing a T-shirt with your name on it to intimidate the other team. And I wasn't even that good of a player, to be honest. I was just kind of the best showman, I guess, of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it all started. I mean, that's just kind of the same mentality. I haven't changed all that much from high school till now. You know, we put our Good Times logo on every friggin' thing we can. Whatever, if I can find a way to do it, I stick it on there. And we market the hell out of Good Times. It's, you know, it's because it's awesome.
It is. It really
is.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm pretty proud because I hand drew that picture, that Good Times logo. I just sketched it out on pen and paper and showed it to Chris one day. And he's like, yeah, that's what we got to do right there. You know, that's the logo.
When you decided to open Good Times, what kind of led up to that moment?
I ran a couple of Rupert Cons, I called them, here in Prince Rupert. And they were gaming conventions that me and my friend Scott Kloster spearheaded. And they were hugely popular. Like, the first one was a little bit small. And then we did one the next year. And it ended up being huge. You know, like, for the size of our town, it was crazy.
Huh, okay.
And at that, I met my partner, Chris Johnson, who he was just a, you know, high school kid at the time. Young guy. But we met him there. And I met a bunch of other local gamers. And so, you know, at that point, I was still, we didn't have any plans for anything. But you know what it was? It was, you know, 16 years ago, my son came along and I wanted to really game as he grew up and stuff. There was lots of things him and his friends wanted to play this. So, you know, we do it. And I had this building where Good Times is. My dad owned the building. So we had this downstairs that we could use kind of as a game club. And it started from there. Like, we started out, it was called The Dungeon. It was down in the back alley. You know, parents dropping their kids off in a back alley behind a building. It was crazy. And I mean, it's got the stupid name, The Dungeon. You know, like, I'd always have to send home handouts and flyers to the parents, making sure they understood what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. Because it was kind of sketchy, to be honest. You know? But it started that. We started doing Duel Masters, which was Kaijudo before it was Kaijudo.
Mm-hmm.
And we started doing... I did Dungeons & Dragons with my friends down there, and we did Duel Masters for the kids for the game club, and it spun off into another game. I don't know if you know, Mech Warrior, which was a clicks game.
Yeah, I'm familiar with.
Yeah, so
I grew up in a game shop. So
yeah, so we spun off into that Mech Warrior, and that club got big. And so then I started buying stuff on eBay, and just so that we'd have a little bit of product for anybody that was interested. And it kind of grew from there. The parents would be like, "Hey, can you open the dungeon for a couple of days before Christmas so we can pick up stuff for our kids for Christmas?" So we ended up bringing in more stuff. I'm just floating it on my Visa and whatnot. And uh-huh. We ended up having, a few thousand dollars in stock kind of. And the spot came available upstairs in the building that I knew if I just didn't take it, that we would probably never open the GameStop shop. We needed that location because we need the downstairs. It's a big game room. It's kind of fell into our laps 5 years ago. We said, we better just bite the bullet, go get a loan. Let's make good times for real. And that's what happened right there. And so we already kind of tested our market, I guess you could say, with the game club. Like we grew that trust from parents, and some of those kids that started out in game club are now young adults. And so, they're spearheading a lot of our games and a lot of the stuff that happens around here. And they've kind of grown up in the good times way, like the way we do things really a lot different than lots of other stores. I mean, and sometimes people like it, sometimes people don't, but, we really foster the whole experience, not the winning, the losing, but the social aspect of playing here is of utmost importance.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference between us and lots of other stores is, I'll always make sure there's a prize. How am I going to tell a 5-year-old there's no prize for him? We got a prize for him.
Yeah.
And
we'll talk about a little bit more about that. I kind of want to talk about the conventions when you first started that. Did it surprise you how many gamers there were just coming out of the woodwork? I mean, is Prince? I guess I should ask: is Prince Rupert a town that people travel to?
No, there is a ferry that stops here, but it's not usually a destination unless you're a sports fisherman or like an eco kind of tourist. This is not really a destination. It's not a shopping destination. It's not anything like that. So we don't get a lot of people coming through here. It is the end of the highway. So anyone, going to Alaska ferries kind of thing, it is a destination for that. There is a ferry that goes south as well. So, I mean, I guess we get people traveling through, but nobody really comes here. I'm going to Prince Rupert.
And then gaming, and then the gaming culture and the convention popularity.
The convention.
Was that surprising?
It caught me off guard. Totally. Okay. I had guys that I had known all my life that I didn't know played Traveler, or they come out and say, "Hey, yeah, I'm a big fan of Star Frontiers. Are you guys running at the convention?" Like, it was crazy that some of the guys that were approaching and showing up for this thing that I never even knew. I'd been playing for a long time. I didn't know they were Dungeons and Dragons players. I didn't know they were into Rifts or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was crazy. That's especially that second one. The first one was kind of almost like an invite only kind of thing.
Okay.
And it was really only me running the adventures and just, it was open to anybody, but kind of had to know me to find out it was even going on. And then the second one was kind of more advertised. We even had a t-shirt. We had a RuperCon 2 t-shirt that I had a guy draw up. And so we, your price of entry included a t-shirt in your size. And we got a couple of the local game stores to sponsor some prizes, and we came up with a lot of different stuff for that second one, and I couldn't believe it. I bet you that convention, for our small town, saw 200 gamers come out.
Wow.
And that was got to be 15 years ago or 20 years ago almost. So
now, did that surprise you in terms of not just the popularity but the personal connections that you made, when you had people show up that you didn't suspect loved games? I mean, was that kind of, did that reveal anything about people in general or just gamers in general?
I'll tell you, that was awesome that day when we saw different people, and I knew that I had that gaming connection with guys that I didn't know were gamers. It was mm-hmm. a big relief. It was just an awesome feeling. That guy there plays Dungeons and Dragons too. That's cool. It was a breath of fresh air for me, because I'd always been, especially when I started out in Dungeons and Dragons, there were so many stigmas with it and, negative publicity with Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And, it was demon worship, all this.
Mazes and monsters. I mean.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, nobody really gave it a fighting chance out of the door when you told them you played it, right? So that when we did the convention and when Scott and I went to Winter Fantasy, which was an early form of Gen Con way back in the day, like it was the winter Gen Con. Yeah, when we started doing that and the paper wrote a little thing on us and people started to know that we did this kind of stuff, it was a big relief for me because I didn't have to hide anymore. You know, like I could still go down and play men's league basketball, but everybody also knew that, you know, I was sort of spearheading role playing and goofing off as well. It was nice. It was a good feeling.
Yeah. Did that bring other people into it?
I think people probably were already into it, but it made it easier for people to come up and approach me and talk. We could talk about it. We had the game room downstairs that, you know, I always said people could use, you know, for their own groups and stuff like that as well. So it just opened up the world, the gaming world for me. I love playing Dungeons & Dragons just as much as I love playing basketball. I'll be honest. I mean, I love both those things. They're totally different. They're not even remotely, you know, the people that play basketball usually aren't the guys that are at D&D. I'll say it straight up. But I mean, it's great that I'm that guy that found a way to do both and really love doing both. And it's great for me now when I see all these, you know, my son's basketball team, they all play D&D. You know, like I've got a group that's just all basketball players on that they play D&D and they're also on the basketball team. We've got a great group of hockey players playing Kaijudo. They go on a hockey trip. 14 of the 16 of them are doing a mini tournament that I give the parents promo cards. You know, I give the parents promo cards so that they can run the tournament while they're away in the next town over playing. It's great. They send back pictures and, you know, they're not scared to tell everybody they play Kaijudo, and it's awesome. You know, it's a really awesome way things are here. I've got two groups that are almost all, I've got one group that's all 13-year-old girls. They play Dungeons & Dragons and they absolutely love it. And you know, the spin that they have on the game is totally different than your group of, you know, 13-year-old boys.
Now let's talk about that. I'm really curious. Cause I was actually going, it's kind of, was kind of based on my, like a question that I was going to ask you is like how these different types of people play games. But I'd love to hear about like, what is the spin of a group of, how do a group of 13-year-old girls play D&D?
Well, I'll be honest, a lot of emphasis on charisma.
Okay.
You know, all their characters need high charisma. That's really important to them.
Okay.
But they think of things differently. Their girls tend to be in role playing tend to be a little bit more cautious. We've got this one awesome young ranger that plays in one of the groups. She'd rather stay at the inn and cook potatoes than go into the cave or go into the mine and go adventuring. It's always, can we turn back? Can we just go back to the village? You know, give that kind of stuff. She wants to role play, but she wants to role play cooking breakfast for everyone. You know, like it's crazy.
Wow. So it's very much like kind of an advanced like doll game, kind of like a game of house a little bit.
And they get right into it. Like I mean, at one point I have a D&D light that shines down on the table. So when it's night, we just have that one on, and we don't have the rest of the room lights on. When they're younger, they were like, "Oh, we got to turn all the lights on. It's getting too scary," kind of thing. It's just awesome. I really have fun running games for them because they catch me off guard as the DM a lot of the time, and they'll go the way I might have plans for them to go one way, and they'll throw a wrench in it and go a totally another route, and or come up with a totally different plan than what I've written into the adventure. It's a story time.
You can't just leave us hanging. You got to tell us some story.
Oh, there's too many. I mean, the one group of young girls that play have been playing for 5 years. So
wow,
they're and we do real slow advancement. Like my D&D is not typical of a lot of other D&D groups, but. You know, we'll play a year and you only level up once kind of thing. So they're all only level 5, level 6. It's not that we play every week, though, either. There's so many groups that I have to balance. And even my son's group, they get left out a lot. And my own group, you know, my own friends, we suffer a ton because I'm just running games for everybody that wants games run for them, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then we do the birthday party one. So that's... You know, that helps pay the rent at the store. So, man, I don't mind running D&D birthday parties. Those are great.
Yeah, let's talk about your shop a little bit. How is it part of who you are? Like, I liked one question that I like to ask shop owners in any sort of interview is how the shop is an extension of who they are. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. know, Good Times, even just the name is pretty much me. I am Good Times. Whatever I do, I tend to bring a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of fun. I'm always the guy telling the story at the party kind of thing. And Good Times is, you know, that's our focus is on having fun. If it's fun, we'll try it. If it's really fun, we'll keep doing it. We don't just play games. I also host paintball. We run paintball. I do paintball birthday parties. We do LARP. We get out there and sword fight and have a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. And if it's, I'll try anything that sounds fun and I'll lead it wholeheartedly. Yeah. I love dressing up. I'm always, you know, game for dressing up for whatever the reason.
Yeah. You sound like you run the shop like you very not self-consciously at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I run the shop. This is just how I want to live, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have any customers. I just got a whole bunch of friends.
Sweet. And then when you kind of talking about on the topic of self-consciousness, were you ever a self-conscious gamer? I mean, were you ever like aware that you had when you were in high school growing older, were you ever aware that you had like this kind of dual life that some people may look down upon? I mean, were you kind of ashamed of being a gamer, or did you ever feel like you were wasting your time? Or
yeah, I never felt like I was wasting my time, but I mean, I knew that people didn't fully understand gaming. Back when I was in school, like I said, you know, like we told everybody that we were playing poker, me and my friends, mm-hmm. when we were actually playing Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, I mean, I didn't through school, there's lots of guys that were playing Dungeons and Dragons that I didn't even know because we were all so scared to say we were playing Dungeons and Dragons. And now we find out that, you know, I found out that there was girls, you know, popular girls that dabbled with Dungeons and Dragons. I'm like, how the hell did I not know that? You know, like it was just crazy. Right. And I don't think I ever regretted playing anything, and I would have taken whatever consequence was thrown my way if someone found out that I play Dungeons and Dragons, or, you know, the same way, you know, if a gamer knows that I'm a basketball player, you know, it's kind of the same way now. It's looked down, being an athlete might be looked down on by a League of Legends champion, right?
Totally.
So I mean, I always figure if you enjoy it, do it, and, you know, if there's consequences to people knowing you're doing something, then you better be ready to accept them or don't do it, I guess.
Yeah, and speaking on that change of culture, has Good Times had a noticeable effect on this small town of Prince Rupert?
Yeah, I mean, I think the town doesn't even realize what they've got here. It seems like we're globally, you know, even sort of we get more accomplished. Our accomplishments globally aren't even really recognized by the town. They just assume every town's got a Good Times kind of place. But yeah, the stuff in the Kaijudo world is huge, and the reception at championships that I got just for being, you know, for all the stuff I do here at Good Times was amazing. I can't even believe it. I'll be honest. I had, when the place was applauding, when Wizards of the Coast mentioned that, you know, some of the stuff that we'd done, and some of the numbers and whatnot, and then the whole place, all those championship caliber guys, you know, world champions and guys that I have utmost respect for as players, when they were applauding, that was vindication. And, you know, I never felt so appreciated as that day, to be honest. I had a tear in my eye. you know, if you'd brought the mic over for me to ask a question or something, I don't think I would have been able to say anything. I was pretty choked up. That was pretty special. That was one of the best weekends of my life. That.
Now let's kind of talk about what led up to this. What kind of things does Good Times do differently?
I think I get out of the shop a lot and promote what we do outside the shop, and we go all out. You know, it's not overly competitive. I always have a prize for everybody, so that it takes that edge off of having to win or anything like that. Like everybody that comes to play, let's just use Kaijudo as an example. Our huge turnouts, we get the huge turnouts, right? Everybody's always talking about that. But the reason for that is everybody can come play and just play because they enjoy the game and because they're having fun doing it. They're not here. Nobody's here playing for a prize. Half the time our winners put the prizes back in for a younger player to get, you know, like they'll win something and they'll put it right back in there. You know, a good example is one of our champions, Tyler Winther. You know, he's always, when he, it's his turn to pick something, he just grabs a prize and stacks it on another prize and makes a double, a bigger one for someone else. And you know, he's kind of, one of the things he said, I mean, I really like Tyler. He is a great kid. And one of the things that he said that really, really blew my mind, because he's been playing ever since it was Game Club. He was down there at the Mech Warrior thing and at the Dual Masters thing. You know, he was a little kid then. Now he's a young adult. But he said one time he was going to run Dragon Dice, which we run every now and then here as well. Mm. And I said, do you need me to come down there and you know, help you get it going for the night? And he was like, know what, Raw, let me take care of it. I said, yeah, you're okay with that? He says, yeah, I want to actually be you for the day. And I was like, wow, that was one of the nicest, you know, like I couldn't believe that. And, you know, I'll always be there to back that kid up no matter what, because of, you know, that impacted me, that phrase. He doesn't even know that it impacted me, but man, that was one of the nicest things he could have said right there. And we dump a lot of care. We've got a lot of people helping because they want to be part of what we're building and what we're growing here. We've got so many volunteers that don't get paid, don't collect a check. Guys that, one of my really good friends now is our main guy behind our magic scene here. And he's a guy that played Dungeons & Dragons growing up. He's another one of those guys that I didn't even know played Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. We didn't actually, you know, we were kind of knew each other because we graduated the same year. And we knew each other, but we weren't really friends. We kind of just knew of each other. He just thought I was a basketball player. And it wasn't until Good Times came along that I found out he was a gamer, and he found out that I was a gamer. And now we're like best friends. You know, we get along. I see him every day. He's one of the guys that comes to shop. I see him every day. And that's, you know, if even just for that reason, Good Times is worth it, worth all the effort just for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's, yeah, it's just awesome. It brings, I've got such good friends here because I got a town full of gamer friends that I didn't have before because of Good Times.
And the Good Times, when people, like, you've stayed in Prince Rupert your whole life.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
When people leave, I'm assuming it, how does that feel? It doesn't feel very good.
Well, no, I mean,
or a lot it's of a guys, really weird question.
A lot of guys that were big, you know, like big parts of what we do at Good Times, you know, have moved on and gone to college or moved away. And, you know, like, as much as I like hearing that they can't find the Good Times experience where they've gone, at the same time, I'm kind of sad for them because I think, you know, every town should have a Good Times. I don't think I'm really doing anything special. Like, I'm just trying to think, what would 12-year-old Rob like every day? And then I just go make it happen, right? And I think of things, if something sounds cool, and it might sound stupid, but I know it's going to be fun and funny, I'm just going to go do it. We're just going to make it happen, you know, like, and we're not going to worry about consequences of anything. We're just going to, you know, if it means I got to, you know, hey, we have a good idea for some prize, something for a prize, or I want to, you know, generate excitement and give away something, I just do it and I'll worry about the consequences after. And, you know, of course, my wife keeps the books for the Good Times, and sometimes that doesn't sit too well with her, but that's part of what makes us successful as well. You know, like, we're very generous in our time and in our product, and I treat everybody that comes in the store like a friend. Though they are friends, I don't treat them like a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know every person that comes in here by name almost. So it's a community hub more than a store. It's guys come and hang out here. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Wizards of the Coast video that they shot when they were up here.
No, not yet.
That one, I mean, kind of says it all. I think Matt Murray was in that one. He said he's a good friend. He's since moved on to another town to go to college. And, you know, he's always telling me that, you know, he's trying to actually bring the Good Times experience to his college. Like, he's hosting Game Club up there, and he's doing it exactly like we would have done it, which is awesome. You know, like, for a young man to see our example and then take it and build on it where he ends up. But yeah, he said something great in the video, in that Wizards of the Coast video, and they caught it and put it on there. It was just, you know, he doesn't have to, he doesn't feel like he has to spend anything when he comes to Good Times. He can come in and just hang out with the staff for a few minutes and talk about games. And he just feels comfortable doing that. So it's kind of like a community cooperative game store where, you know, a few people work there, but for the most part, we're all just hanging out here.
Yeah. And you mentioned your wife as an accountant, or as she does the books anyway. So she seems pretty invested in the success of Good Times Games.
Oh, for sure. I mean, more so to her is she's happy seeing me happy. She's great. She encourages me to chase these dreams and make dreams come true for so many other people. She sees the value, and she'll come to dual day and see, you know, 30 kids clustered around me, you know, Rob this, you know, showing me cards and whatnot. And she sees, she knows that that has more importance than financial results a lot of the time as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. Good Times does quite well. And, you know, Kaijudo has been a big, big part of that success. And the store is doing, you know, we've got big plans for the future. And, you know, that's in part to her, because I'm not a businessman, really. I'm more of an entertainer. Mm-hmm. And she does the, you know, make sure we stay in line and we, you know, we are watching what we're doing so that the business can be successful, because we can make it successful with all the fun. But I mean, if we're not careful with how we take the proceeds of all that and all our success and use it wisely, mm-hmm. you know, neither Chris, my partner, or myself, we're not really businessmen. We're more gamers and you know, like I said, I'm an entertainer. I'm kind of the town's goofball, and it's a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
But having my wife take care of the books and just make, you know, she tells me when I'm doing something right. She tells me when I'm making mistakes, and through 5 years we've learned and we're just getting better and better. And I can't see myself slowing down. I mean, my enthusiasm's just as strong now as it was when I first opened the store, if not more. I mean, I think the whole global success of Good Times in Kaijudo is fueling me to keep trying to one up myself and keep trying to make the community, the, you know, the Kaijudo Dojo and the whole Kaijudo community and Wizards of the Coast. I keep trying to make them amaze them, and I want to keep trying to make all those players proud and have maybe set the bar and inspire some other tournament organizers, inspire some other store owners, and inspire a whole bunch of players. Like, I mean, if I can make things better in so many other Kaijudo communities just by leading by example, it's awesome. You know, the fact that everybody kind of respects Good Times for its Kaijudo success, and you know, we have so many other guys that want to kind of do some of the things that have made us successful at their places, that's a huge pat on the back for how we do things. I mean, I was championship weekend there. I had a list of guys I wanted to meet, because they're guys that I've maybe talked to online or followed their posts in the dojo and stuff. And I brought some t-shirts for some of them and stuff. And you know, you saw the power bands and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but I wanted to say, you know, hey, I'd be proud for you to wear our Good Times logo, because I think you're an awesome ambassador, an awesome personality for Kaijudo. And meeting some of those guys, you know, the Brian Starners, the Rob Walanowski's, you know, Robert E. Bear, some of those guys, meeting them was really, really important to being at championship weekend for me, you know, and just getting to sit and talk with Wizards of the Coast, the guys that I kind of met already at last season's champs. And when they came up and did the video, and just seeing them again and maybe spreading some more of the ideas I've had and seeing what their direction for Kaijudo is, though, that's really important to me. And the fact that people knew who I was is amazing. You know, like, that's, mm-hmm. I'm just a little guy from, you know, I'm just from a little town here in the middle of nowhere that nobody, none of those players even knew where it was prior to Kaijudo coming along. So, you know, like, that's amazing.
It's so,
like,
true.
I'm on the dance floor with stores in New York, with stores in Rhode Island, you know, with ARG and with, you know, like, huge California stores and stuff like that. And I'm in there in the mix when they discuss Kaijudo with those stores, and that's amazing for me. I mean, my town's got 10,000 people. I mean, they've got schools with that many people.
Mm-hmm. No, kind of going to allow me to gush a little bit, because you mentioned how June was so supportive, and I have to express my thanks to my own girlfriend, because she is her and June sound cut from the same cloth in terms of just being supportive, and I can't express how important that is and how much it means to me, and I'm sure June's support means to you. That being said, I just wanted to kind of move to, how did you guys meet?
We're the stereotypical high school sweethearts, to be honest. So,
oh, really?
We went to high school together. We met in, I guess it would have been grade 8, and got together in grade 10 and have been together ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. She's always, I mean, I'm a dreamer and I'm a, you know, I'm kind of a character, and she's always been that grounding factor. You know, I think without June, I would have imploded or exploded long time ago. It's just easy for me to fly off the handle and go too far sometimes. And
what do you mean? That,
well, I mean, I don't do anything half-ass. I go all out, and who knows what would have happened growing up. I might have self-destructed somewhere along the line because I go a little too hard sometimes. And geez, that good grounding factor that brings me back to real life and doesn't let me go too far sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty out there kind of guy, pretty crazy. And who knows, when we got together, that was the most important thing. And having her back me is, you know, like I fight for her approval. You know, like everything I do, I always think, you know, what's June going to think? And then when my son Jacob came along, that was, I turned everything around for me. I really smartened up, and I, you know, being the big guy at good times here and having all these kids around, you wouldn't believe if I told you before Jacob came along, I did not like kids that much.
Wow.
They always liked me. They always come and hang around. And I think I've, for the most part, been the same kind of guy, but I just didn't really have time for them. I was kind of selfish with my time, mm-hmm. and didn't really want to share it with, you know, with everybody. And when Jacob came along, that was the turning point. All of a sudden I had him and I had his friends, and, you know, I wanted them to have good coaching for basketball. I wanted them to be able to do all the fun stuff that I knew was fun. I wanted to share all of my experiences with all him, well, not just him, but him and his friends and his school and everybody around. And it kind of spread now. Now I want to share it with the town, and I want to share it with North America. And I want to, yeah, it's weird. It's like I got this, I'm driven to just, you know, to keep pushing forward and try to, every time we get 100 people at an event, I want 110, I want 120. And I just, it's weird. That's my personality though. I've got that kind of fireball personality, and it's nice to be able to put it in the right direction and use it for something productive.
Now, and when we talked in Dallas, you mentioned that why you started the store, and I thought it was a really cool thing that you started it because of your son. Can you I just wanted to hear you say the words on the podcast so that other people know how cool of a thing it is, like how cool of a dad you are.
Oh, hey, thanks. Appreciate that. Well, I wanted the store so that Jacob and his friends would have somewhere to play and not be kind of persecuted for playing games and whatnot. And I wanted to insulate him from, you know, like if you got, I always say, like, if you're a grade 8 and you know a bunch of grade 12s, grade 10s, and grade 11s and 9s, you're not going to get picked on. So, I mean, we wanted to make a big game. It was selfish reasons. I wanted him to have a big group of friends and lots of people to call friends and lots of cool things to do and to have fun and to experience a bunch of awesome stuff that I experienced and stuff that I knew was coming down the line that would be cool. So it was purely selfish reasons. I wanted to make sure Jacob had it the best he could, mm-hmm. is one of the main reasons I wanted to open Good Times and just give him all the cool experiences I knew he could have through gaming and get a big group of friends for him so that he was, you know, he was just a well-adjusted, easygoing kind of guy that didn't have to worry about the pressures of high school drama and whatnot.
Kids, having your own, how did that change your attitude towards kids?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I can't really pinpoint the point that it made an impact, but I can't remember when that switch was flipped. You know, I don't feel that anything changed, but something obviously did because I like having kids around. We have a lot of fun. I like the fact that they don't treat me like a grown up. They kind of just treat me as a bigger version of them. We
12-year-old like, Rob.
Yeah, 12-year-old Rob, but except he can drive and, you know, he has the game store kind of thing. And you know, I walk into the store after work, my day job, and, you know, there's always a few guys here that want to play me. Even tonight, Levi wanted to get a game in, and, you know, they're waiting on me to get here and to talk about this card and to see how my day was. That's just cool that I've got all these friends, all different age groups. It's fantastic, you know, that I'm accepted by everybody. And we just have a great time. And all the cool stuff that I can kind of create and come up with, I've got a whole bunch of people to share it with. So it's good. It's like, you know, that gives me that sort of that vessel for all the good ideas I have. I've got somewhere to implement it.
Yeah. I'm going to wrap things up a little bit. Why gaming? Now, I know that, you know, you and I, we both have a personal connection with gaming. simply because we both started gaming at, you know, I started at 11, you started at 13. So it's kind of part of our childhoods and a little bit of nostalgia. But why gaming? Like, why is gaming so important to you?
Everything about me is gaming. You know, whether it's basketball gaming or gaming in the store here, having fun is awesome. And being able to be creative and laugh with friends and, you know, teach other people to have the same kind of fun that you've had growing up. Yeah, you remember growing up, it was awesome. All your best memories are probably from your gaming adventures and different stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
It's the same for me. I love all those experiences and all the stories that came with it. And it's almost like, you know, my characters and whatnot, they're a part of me. They're all me, right? So I love playing games, even if it's just Monopoly. I like playing games. I like to be interactive with my entertainment. I don't want to watch things a lot of the time. I want to be part of it. And gaming lets you do that. Like, gaming lets me be the heroic paladin when I don't get to be it in real life. And, you know, gaming lets me be the sneak thief sometimes and things like that. It just lets, you know, if I want to be a pilot, a giant robot, you can't do that in real life. But wait.
You're crushing my fantasies.
Well, I mean, one day we'll be able to do that, I'm sure. We've seen YouTube videos where it's coming close, but until I can get the 1.8 million to build that robot, we'll just have to settle with playing it on BattleTech or something.
It's true. Building on that, why do you think gaming is important?
I mean, it's the same thing as exercising your body. It's exercising your mind, keeping things sharp. You know, we see it in all our games. There's lots of problem solving. It's important socially more than anything. I mean, gaming is important socially. Some of the guys that come here, they need good times and they need games, because otherwise they'd just be at home on the Xbox all day, every day, right? I think gaming is important. You know, well, I mean, that kind of gaming is good too, I guess. But
I was gonna say it, like,
everybody likes that too. But I mean, I like sitting across the table from someone and shaking my opponent's hand. And maybe it's a kid I just an acquaintance, not a friend. But that's important socially, because I mean, you have to do that in real life. The stuff I learned from Dungeons and Dragons and from gaming is stuff I apply in real life every day. You know, all year. You know, that's just important, right?
And can you talk about something? Do you know anything specific you've learned from gaming that you've applied to your life?
Well, I mean, being able to get up and talk in front of a crowd. You know, like I was a shy kid, just like anybody else growing up. And when you become the dungeon master, you kind of have to be able to speak on the fly and speak in front of the crowd. And that was important for me. That was great. Yeah, I mean, you use all kinds. I mean, I see every day here at the store, I see 7-year-olds doing kaijudo math, and that's day to day. That's everyday math. You need that stuff in real life. Reading those cards, you need that. Memorizing stuff, problem solving, overcoming adversity. That's all important stuff. You need that in life. And, you know, if I can throw some life lessons in for these kids while they're growing up at gaming, it's like an extra day, extra couple days of school for some of these kids. They love being here and they're learning stuff at the same time. Parents like that. You know, if I can slip in life experiences that I've had growing up, you know, when I always tell the story when I got bullied, and, you know, I always tell it in the end, like, and the kids all look at me like, "What, Rob, you got bullied?" I'm like, "Yeah, I got bullied too, you know." But I tell them, you know, the guy that you're bullying, if you're going to be a bully, that guy that you're bullying, that might be the guy that you're sitting in his office looking for a job 20 years from now.
Yeah.
That might be the guy that you're trying to date his sister. How good of a shot do you have, you know, if you bullied that guy, you know? So that, I mean, those are things I can teach the kids through gaming. That's really important as well. And, you know, I think the biggest lesson is just to have a little bit of fun. Try to have fun every day. I'm always saying that. Try to have a little bit of fun every day. Otherwise, that day's not worth living.
Yeah, I agree. And a cleanup question, because I'm just going to ask you this at the last, because I forgot to ask you about it earlier.
Yeah, no problem.
I'd like to talk about girls and gaming. And you have a healthy group of girls, and I'm assuming young women and older, I mean, female gamers. To have that appeal, did you do anything different? I mean, have you noticed that there are different, that girls and guys need different things from games? Or how have you cultivated that sort of, that crowd, that sort of mixed crowd, as opposed to the typical, you know, mostly guys, or like if there is a girl there, it's typically a girlfriend. Like, how have you cultivated a different population?
Yeah, that's kind of the question, isn't it?
Or does it just happen by accident?
That's the holy grail. No, I've actually I hate the fact that game stores sell to half the population, and that drives me to go out and, like, I went and demonstrated games to the local Pathfinders, to the local Girl Guides. You know, we've recruited one of our young ladies that works at the store. You know, we hired her because she was a girl, because I wanted someone for the little girls to look up to. You know, I know I can't offer that. I can't offer that older sister kind of experience. So we kind of really focus on, I work hard at, you know, not only getting girls coming to the shop, but also retaining them through the games. You know, we have a special rule in our prize pool that if there's a tie in any case, it always, the girl always picks first. I really try to make the girls feel special and make them feel like we appreciate them joining us for games and having fun with us. You know, if it means we spend a little extra time trying to teach them to play or help them with their deck. You know, once you, the really what happens is the ball starts rolling. You get a couple in there and they have fun. And so then it's easier for a couple more to come because there is a couple there. And we've got some great, like we got Sue Winther and Lynn Prosh and Michelle Drummond. And these are some of the moms that they play and the kids, their kids and all the other kids look up to them because they come and play. And that's huge. That's awesome. Right. So now they feel great because, you know, they're set an example for their kids and they're looked up to. It gives them something to talk about at the dinner table with their son or daughter. And, you know, we start really, you know, we get girls coming in really young with our Hexbug League. And because, yeah, our Hexbug League, we got 2-year-olds that they start as gamers. We've made customers at 2 years old, right?
Uh-oh.
And they come down and that's how we start them. You know, they haven't split into their social groups or anything at that age, right? So, you know, you make them friends then. And they're going to be friends for life. It's pretty hard to pick on someone if you spent 6 years in the Hexbug Club with that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just try to make everybody feel special. And you know, like for the girls, we're just, you know, I'll run Dungeons and Dragons games for them if they want, and you know, if they need anything, we're just really willing to try to make them feel accepted. And you know, anytime you add a girl, you add one girl, you add 4 boys. That's my algebra math on the whole factory. You had one girl, you had 4 boys. You had 4 girls, you had 16 boys. You know, like it's just, it goes like that. And, you know, the boys want to be where girls are too. So, I mean, it only serves purpose that you should try to have some girls in the store. You know what I mean? Like, because there was lots of days where we didn't see a girl in the store at all. You know, 0 girls all day. And that's what the norm at a lot of game stores. And I don't like that. I want everybody to come play games, and I want it to be a social kind of scene as well, not just a gaming scene, you know, so that we're, you know, there's been days where I run D&D and the girls get talking about what happened at school, and I just let them, you know, like the boys might get mad and say, hey, I want to play a little bit here. But, you know, like the girls will just be like, if they want to spend their whole D&D game talking about what happened at school, you know, so be it. They're there to have fun. If that's what they want to be doing, then that's what we let happen.
Okay. Cool.
Same thing for the boys. Sometimes the boys have, you know, they're talking about what they were doing at hockey or whatever. And you're just, it's not like you're not following a schedule at D&D. It's just, you're there to have fun. And even if it's just a social, you know, an hour of social time, then that's good too. You're doing it right. As long as everybody's having fun, you're doing D&D right. There's no hard and fast rules to D&D. If everybody's having a good time, you're doing it right.
Cool.
Yeah, I like it better when we're playing games and we have boys and girls and adults and moms and dads. I mean, it's a better, well-rounded group than, you know, you can get, sometimes you get the boys will go a little bit aggro nerd, and sometimes having the girls, the girls there will take that edge off, right? It just makes it so that it's just everybody having fun.
Cool. Well, Rob, thank you very much for your time. I have to say, I meeting you and just hearing everything, how awesome Good Times Games is, was really inspiring and has already inspired me in a lot of my work and a lot of how I approach. It changed a lot of how I approach community building in my store. So awesome. I just wanted to thank you for just being great.
Thanks a lot, man. That means a lot to me. yeah, I don't. Sometimes I don't know that I'm doing as good as stuff, but it's inspiring to me when I hear guys like you saying, you know, that it's inspiring you. So it just pushes me to keep doing awesome stuff, I guess.
Yeah, and so anything awesome that you can tell us that you're that is on the horizon?
Well, yeah, I would like to talk about our December 21st Kaijudo holiday extravaganza that we're hosting here at Good Times.
Okay.
We plan on shattering the Kaijudo attendance record that weekend. We are doing a free-to-play, so no cost entry. The only thing we are asking is that people bring a non-perishable food item for the local food bank. And we've got some sponsors, and Good Times, of course, is sponsoring, but our friends at City West are ponying up a good portion, but we're looking at a retail well over $2,000 prize pool for this, a prize for everybody that comes to play, and we're hoping to get over 120 people. We've got some of our friends that have helped us along the way, you know, from other towns. I want to mention Robert Ebert, who is one of the championship level players. He's always helping us, and he's going to Skype in and wish us a Merry Christmas. We've got some other guys that are going to do that as well. I want to mention Dave Pendergrass signed a bunch of cards for us, and our friends at Wizards of the Coast. We've got this is going to be the best prize pool in the history of Kaijudo, and we're going to have an awesome. And we've got the local news coverage going to do it as well, and we're going to have a blast that day. December 21st is the last weekend before Christmas. We'll have a ton of pictures. We're going to have some Skype. We're going to get some people from Wizards of the Coast in to say hi, and it's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to showing off what we do at that event, and hopefully we set the bar really high. And the Kaijudo community, the gaming community, Wizards of the Coast, everybody can I'm hoping everybody will be proud of us for what we've accomplished at that event.
Cool. Now that sounds really wicked. I wish I could make it.
Yeah, that's going to be, maybe we can Skype you in.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to. I will actually Skype in. I will actually Skype in from my store.
Yeah, that'd be great.
People at our store, we would love to say hello.
That would be great. We would love to have you. And you know, putting you on the spot again, I wouldn't mind if we got to do another podcast down the road, maybe talking more about Kaijudo a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know we were talking a lot about you know, gaming culture and stuff today, and it was great. And it's nice to be able to have a sounding point for some of that cool stuff. But you know me, I love talking about gaming.
All right, Rob, and if people wanted to get a hold of you to just, you know, pick your brain, tell you more about how awesome you are, et cetera, how could they get a hold of you?
The easiest way to get a hold of me is to, you know, you can add me on Facebook. I'm Rob Gruber on Facebook. You can add Good Times on there as well, and you can see, you know, pictures from all the cool stuff we do. Yeah, we like showing off all the neat events that we have happening. So Facebook's probably the best venue. I do have email as well. You can contact me on Facebook and get my email. That's all good. I love talking about gaming. So, you know, don't hesitate. If you've got a question about Dungeons & Dragons, Kaijudo, you name it, I'm willing to chat it up. And thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you very much for being on. And I will talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Numbered my days, and I'll go along with everything you say.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Once again, you've been listening to Across the Table 31 in my interview with Rob Gruber, owner of Good Times Games, and overall just great guy for the community, even though, you know, he's not quite a magic guy, and I know this is kind of a magic podcast, but, you know, really the community, when it comes down to it, we're all just one and the same. Whether you're a Kaijudo player, a D&D player, or whatever. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Matt Mendoza or via email at acrossthetablepod@gmail.com. And you can find me on Facebook at Across the Table Podcast or on Twitter at Across the Cast if you want to follow me for, you know, news, updates on guests, etc., etc. As well, you can always find me at my homes, kccompetition.com, manadeprived.com, and iTunes. Thank you again for listening. Next week, we've got an interview with I always say we. I don't understand why. There's just me. I've got an interview with a prominent planeswalker that you might enjoy. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, I hope you have a safe weekend. I know that we're going to get a lot of snow in a lot of different places, so I don't know about where you're from, but anyway, I'm rambling. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving, and I will see you next week. Bye.